The Fantasy Animation Podcast is a completely independent production. It is made by experts in the field. Chris is a lecturer in liberal arts and visual cultures education at King's College London and author of The Computer Animated Film, available in all good bookshops. And I, Alex that is, am a senior lecturer in film and media studies at the University of Portsmouth and author of Encountering the Impossible, The Fantastic in Hollywood Fantasy Cinema, available in even better bookshops. We do this podcast to provide audiences with an informative and hopefully entertaining guide through the ways in which you can not only enjoy fantasy and animation, but study it, examine it, explore it, and of course, make it and have a career in it. I hope you enjoy the show.
Hi, listeners. Welcome to the latest episode of Fantasy Animation Podcast with me, Chris Holliday.
And me, Alex Sargent.
We're doing it. We're doing Toy Story. This is very exciting. I've got nothing to say about the film.
How has it taken us?
I know, 100-odd
episodes. 130-odd episodes to do Toy Story.
I know.
Shame on us, Chris.
Shame on you. I'm pretty certain I wanted to do it, and you've...
I don't know. I think it's just one of those behemoths where it's like, how on earth do we attack this thing and say something of interest about a film that's been... you know, endlessly watched and loved and appraised and all this kind of stuff. It's hard, isn't it? So
it's probably one of the films that we've talked about the most on the podcast, but as a kind of reference point to something else. So it's 90s-ness, its relationship to technology, the toys come alive, kind of emphasis in fantasy and animation. So I would bet that it's probably one of the films that we've talked about the most in passing, but haven't kind of done a deep dive. So obviously, it's something that a film that the students love to... I was going to say love to hear me teach about, but I really mean love to write about. They like to kind of think about its importance, its aesthetics, its style. It's obviously, you know,
It's the first computer animated film.
Well, it's the first...
Oh, I knew you were going to do that. What is it?
Well, no, the first computer animated film is kind of made, I think it's made in South America. So it's like Brazilian or something. Cassiopeia, it's called. So it's not technically the first. It's the first...
It's the Snow White of...
Yes, it's the first computer... Normally considered the first computer animated film, but it is tricky to kind of talk about it from like a fresh angle. So
thank God we've got a guest and a great guest at that.
Yes. So we're delighted to welcome to the podcast Dr. Lucy Fife Donaldson. So Lucy is senior lecturer at the University of St. Andrews, whose work and research kind of traverses a number of different fields, different areas. So film and television style, audiovisual design, below the line labour. And labour is obviously the theme of the BAFT conference, which is where we are at the moment, in a different room, so different echo, and co-editor of 6 books, including her monograph Texture in Film for Palgrave Macmillan series Palgrave Close Readings in Film and Television. Television Performance, co-edited with James Walters, and most recently Epic/Everyday, another book with slash in the title. There you go. Epic/Everyday Moments in Television. So that was Manchester University Press from 2023. Her writing has also appeared in a number of other, as I said, another number of other kind of contexts, from movie to cine action to journal of film and screen media. And she's written again on everything from television aesthetics, biopics, screen sound, and crucially, the animated film Toy Story. So Lucy, thank you for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, I'm really struck by this last little bit, where all of these different things that you've written about, all these, and obviously your work, one of the things that we can talk about at the end is certainly your work in kind of video essays, kind of pioneering work in video essays. But you've written about Toy Story. So I guess a little starter is, where does Toy Story fit in? I know your work on kind of surface and texture and things like this. So where does Toy Story fit in with your research, and what kind of drew you to kind of writing about the film?
For my book, Texture and Film, I'd always kind of planned to think about CGI or, you know, kind of animation. And I'd actually thought about originally writing about Monsters, Inc. Because fur, obviously, texture.
Yeah.
That seemed like a no-brainer. And then in the end, the final chapter of the book, I'd kind of thought about, you know, this is the moment where I bring in technology and CGI.
Yeah.
But it didn't quite kind of fit. So I kind of scrapped that idea, but thought, oh, this is something that I should come back to. And then I think, I can't remember exactly the kind of timeline, but Susan Smith and Sam Summers were doing the book yep. on Toy Story. They'd already had the conference, I think.
Yeah.
But they got in touch to ask me if I would like to contribute to the book, basically, yeah. which was extremely kind of them to think of me. So this was the kind of the perfect opportunity for me to, do the thing that I thought might be part of the book. It was also a kind of, I've not written about animation before. Yeah. I'd not written about CGI before. So it was also like, what do I do?
I was going to ask you, it's kind of a challenge, because a lot of your film, I mean, perhaps it's a good opportunity to kind of think about some of the films in the book. So you said that the last chapter was, like, this is your, you originally thought it was going to be your opportunity to do kind of technology and stuff. So the yeah. book's not about animation, but some of the ideas, well, lots of the ideas, really lend themselves to a discussion of animation
yeah.
and specifically, I guess, digital animation.
Yeah, and actually a kind of opportunity. One thing the book really did for me was make me think about the work of the designer and the kind of contribution of people like sound designers and costume designers, partly because when I was working on the book, I read Vincent Labrutto's books of interviews with designers. So he has three books. One is interviews with editors, one is kind of sound people,
yeah.
and another is production designers. And during the course of reading those, I kind of really kind of got a lot out of the ways in which people like that talk about their work. Like they're
yeah.
much more kind of interesting and detailed, I think, than often actors and directors can be. You know, that's not to say that actors and directors can't talk interestingly about their work, but they often have, I guess, like a thing that they want to present. But people who work on the kind of technical and craft side are much more just kind of interested in like the work they're doing. Mm. So the Toy Story chapter partly became a kind of an opportunity to kind of explore that in a little bit more yeah. detail. I mean, not that I do that all the way through the chapter, but it did make me think about the animator and particularly the kind of you know, huge team of animators and all of the work that they do. Yeah. And that was a really like rewarding process of researching that yeah. as well.
It sounds like I think I identify quite strongly what you're talking about in terms of transposing one kind of analysis to another in terms of yeah. I don't know if I easily
Careful
identify
now.
As an animation scholar because it feels like that's there's a particular set of ideas that I feel like I'm coming into rather yep. than have full access to. I remember when I first started writing about animation, I'd show Chris like just drafts and be like, am I allowed to say the word lens? Is it a lens? Like, yeah. like little yeah, things yeah. even like that you're not sure of suddenly because you're entering into this world and things like that, right?
Yes, yes.
So yeah. so how did you go about kind of when you came to write the chapter? What is it, what's different, I guess, for you about talking about or analysing texture in animation compared to, say, analysing costume design, these kind of spaces in live action, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I was definitely a bit apprehensive of being like, hi, I'm just going to butt in about animation.
But that I find, sorry, I think that's interesting. Actually, it kind of reflects the discipline of animation studies, this sort of, I have an idea and then I use animation to sort of test it out, or I'm within animation and it has its own histories and its own traditions. Mm. And actually there's a kind of, I wouldn't say split within the field, but there are two different sort of ways of thinking about that. Animation is sort of a very specific thing that has these traditions and aesthetic practices and stuff, versus some other people, let's say kind of Susan Buck, and thinking about like the pervasiveness of that animation is kind of everything. And then there's that tension between where if it's everything, then it's sort of nothing. And so actually I think that is a really interesting, your movement of, hi, I'm just, that I think is an interesting way that some people do think mm-hmm. about animation. And then you realize that there's all these interdisciplinary sure. ways of thinking about the, yeah. the field. But anyway, sorry, so you were going, hello, I'm here.
Yeah. I mean, I guess like a way in to thinking about Toy Story is that other people have written about Toy Story and the kind of particular like texture, feel, yeah. Like it kind of... yeah, became a film that people kind of identified, like, it's the first CGI. I mean, as you just established it, that's a contentious topic.
Well,
but yeah, that it is this kind of, oh, this is what CGI can do, yep. and it becomes about the kind of both the tactility, but also the deficiencies of that kind of plasticity. So, so Vivian Sobchak and Jennifer Barker have written about it. Ian Garwood wrote really brilliantly about it in his book. So I had a kind of, because those are the people that I'm kind of in conversation with in the book, that was a nice way in for me to kind of, well, I can engage with these people and then I can use that as a springboard to think about the things that, you know, how can I contribute to that conversation, essentially, and kind of use it to explore some of the things that I'm kind of interested in. So,
and I guess there are kind of texture. I mean, I'm using these terms, surface and texture, like they're the synonyms, but I know that you'll. That's not right. That's not right.
Tell us about.
No, but they're related.
The narratives around kind of texture, I guess, in the digital are very, certainly in this period, I guess, would be very kind of technicist or technological, like the material or industry papers around the latest software that enables these things. So you have your Toy Stories and your plastics and your kind of that plasticity you have, and which the film folds into the way that it's shot as well. But then you have like the natural world and A Bug's Life and Monsters Inc. and Fur, as you said, and then Finding Nemo and Water, and then you have Fire and Incredibles, and you have kind of landscapes, dusty landscapes and cars. Ratatouille and food. So each of these films become these testing grounds for all these different kinds of technologies. And obviously Toy Story has this quite close relationship with Tin Toy, one of the first very successful short film, Pixar short film from 1989, I think. Plastic man-made surfaces, I guess, those kind of artificial surfaces seem to lend themselves quite well to digital technology, which is itself virtual, so forth. Yeah.
And that, I mean, I guess that's the other side of me being a bit apprehensive in that I'm not a CGI scholar either. And I'm also, you know, don't pretend to know a lot about that technology. So I had to kind of do a little bit of learning of that, but also, you know, I guess I didn't need to, to kind of have a full history of that. But yeah, I think you're right. There's something about the way in which those films are conceived in order to kind of test the technology and to kind of develop it further. Yeah. And I guess you could absolutely see like each Pixar film in particular as a like, what are we going to tackle this time? How are we going to improve, et cetera.
So you wanted to write about animation and technology in the book. You didn't have the opportunity and have the space like we all don't in these things. Your approach to do Toy Story, was that, you know, was it, I want to talk about CGI, I want to talk about Toy Story, or what did you feel like you wanted to say about these things that had been left unsaid, I guess, you know?
I think when I was invited, I was kind of like, oh, this is the opportunity. And then it was like, oh, and now what do I do? What do I do with that after these very kind people have invited me?
But you, something in your intuition felt like there was something to say about this.
And I guess like the kind of references that I just mentioned, other than Ian's work, which kind of takes it in a different direction, we're quite kind of, oh, Toy Story is about texture, blah, 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 but not much more than that. So I felt like there was a kind of...
What does that mean for
opportunity,
a film to be about texture?
Yeah. Like it's touchable and not to kind of, you know, or like Vivian Sobchak and Jennifer Barker are brilliant, but they were doing other things. So yeah, it was kind of like, here's an opportunity for me to kind of engage with that work and think about, precisely like surfaces and what are surfaces doing and how is animation kind of conceiving them? And I guess it's partly that thing, which I think I say in the chapter of like, you know, animation often becomes a way to be like, well, it's so designed, like the kind of inescapability of the fact that somebody has put all of these things together. And, you know, obviously that happens in all film, like there's no kind of accident or, you know, everything is set up, etc. But like the kind of unavoidability of multiple people have created this space that did not exist before and have thought very carefully about that kind of intensifies perhaps conversations about texture and surface and and design and the work that goes into that.
Well, actually, funny enough, because we were talking beforehand about a few kind of mutual friends, but I know that Tom Brown has written a, he's thinking about Pixar actually, and he's written a blog actually for the website about kind of the sort of intensified mise-en-scene, that it is so constructed that everything's too, it's not perfect, perfect's not the right word, but it's so designed. So I like that idea of this kind of the inescapable designed quality of these kinds of movies.
And it links to what you say on the podcast often, Chris, which is the idea that, you know, there's something about animation that is inherently rhetorical, right? And that to animate an object to bring is to say something about that object in the way filming an object doesn't necessarily have that kind of overt rhetoric to it, right? So to animate a surface, to animate a texture is to
commit to some general idea of what the fur looks like.
For the benefit of the listeners, I think...
If you're going to say for people who haven't seen Toy Story...
No, you're not going to do that. If you haven't seen Toy Story, this is not the perfect introduction to a movie that you should have seen by now. If you want to continue listening to this podcast, that is at least. Can we kind of give some sort of critical definition to these, like texture? I'm sure people know what we're talking about in the sense that they know what the word texture means, but perhaps they haven't thought about thinking about a film or an animation in terms of texture before. I know this is something
digital has no texture, right? Discuss.
Or indeed, what does it even to mean? What does it mean? What do you mean texture adds something? You know, that kind of basic. Could you talk about that? Help define that. I know how you use it in your work, but perhaps in your own words, and then maybe we can talk about how that works in Toy Story.
Yeah. So I think, I mean, obviously Chris has already said there's this kind of relationship between texture and surface. So it's like, in any film, I think all films have texture. Some more draw our attention to texture than others. But it's that sense of like, you can understand or predict what a surface might feel like. Mm-hmm. So is it soft? Is it smooth? Is it rough? Is it hard? You know, is it plasticky? Is it woolen? You know, these are all things about texture and our relationship to film. Texture is also about, you know, a way of talking about fine detail. Say something is texture or has texture is like to engage with the kind of fine detail of it. You can also think of texture as a more kind of structural kind of meaning. So texture in music has kind of structural connotations. So in my book, I kind of talk about texture in being that kind of like, what does a surface feel like, and texture of being about kind of narrative, world, you know, that kind of thing.
So we're talking about analysing the myriad ways in which a film presents a sense of texture to the spectator, and that being a really important kind of, we might not think about it necessarily consciously when we're watching a movie, but that being an important part of the way we kind of take a meaningful experience of engaging with the film. So I guess this is a question for both of you then, really, because I'm kind of interested in this. Are we saying that CGI is a particularly textured medium, like compared to, say, cell animation? Or is there something about, you know, could we do this? Could we do this? Could we have done this podcast on what else was out that year that was the Lion King or something like that, you know, and done Pocahontas, equally? Yeah. Or is there something about Toy Story in the way it presents this new technology to a mainstream audience that relies or emphasizes a rhetoric? Lucy is nodding, so now I'm allowed to stop speaking. So
yeah, I mean, I guess, like, on the one hand, I would say, like, cell animation absolutely has texture, but it, I guess, maybe it doesn't have as many different kinds of textures. Perhaps, I don't know. I would have to like look at some examples and think about
frantically
that.
Frantically Googling as you carry on.
But I think, well, I mean, one of the interesting things about CGI is that it uses layers. And this is, again, limited technological understandings. But through reading about particularly the animator's work, the kind of multiple layers of animation to kind of create surfaces so that you like start with something that's smooth and you add texture to it. And the animators on Toy Story in particular talks about wanting to kind of make things dirty and rough and kind of add texture for precisely those kind of, you know, this is a space that people live in. So yeah, maybe that's like partly the kind of the function of like how the technology works and how people make it.
Yeah.
And just to pretend, because it's the only thing I know, I can pretend successfully that I know what I'm talking about before Chris tells us much more about it, because he does know what he's talking about. I mean, when we've interviewed animators on the podcast, like this is like in terms of labor division, we're at a conference about labor, right? There is literally people hired to texturize their
You've literally stolen my point.
Oh, have I? All right. Well, that's just me doing the podcast with you.
I,
you
know, no, but that's exactly right. That obviously... I would be interested to, and I had a quick Google, I just picked a film, I picked Aladdin from 1992, and you have a credit for texture map painter. So kind of at the level of sort of the workflow of these films, the divisions, you have your, and it's expanded since then, so you can look at some credits of more contemporary computer animated films, and you can really get a sense of the different sort of, the different ways in which effects and water and all the, you know, all the different, all the different fields are sort of speaking to each other, in charge of performance, background, the fact that you can even talk about effects in a entirely animated film and all this sort of stuff. So it would be interesting to know. I'd be very surprised if a texture map, if there was a credit for texture in a live action film, but it would more like, it's more likely to be folded into costume, like it's just an assumption rather than a separate group of people that are the texture people, and that's where animation is the
I think that's a useful way to think about it. And I guess like to my earlier point of like, you know, thinking about the designers was a way to they are absolutely the texture people. That's like what sound is doing, what foley artists are doing is adding texture, but we wouldn't kind of name it like that. But in animation you have like shaders,
yes,
who that's their job, and like you say, it's a kind of an interesting like workflow of things get passed through departments. And I'm always fascinated by, I mean, I'm fascinated by credits always. But like you say, the kind of
new media scholar, you can't leave the film your students, the credits are part of the film.
But you're like, oh, and that, you know, how many people are working on the texture, like, and now it's kind of, it gets bigger and bigger and bigger of all these people.
And there's this, I mean, there's a slight, it's not entirely an exact science, but the slight distinction, and I think I've mentioned this before, but between sort of animators on computer animated films tend to work on shots, they are allocated particular shots, and it's passed along. So you could watch a 15-second sequence and there's, you know, 10 different animators that have each had their own second of material, and that was my shot. And you get a lot of actual animators on Twitter that talk about a film that's just come out and they say, really thrilled to animate this shot of Moana doing this. So animators in computer animated films tend to work on particular scenes and sequences. That's not to say that the scenes and sequences that they're given don't often include a particular character. So by virtue of their work on scenes and sequences, they're also kind of unofficially working on the same character each time, sort of thing, who may or may not appear in the film with regularity. In something like Aladdin, the credits are organised by character. So you have like Jasmine, and then you have, right, the supervising character animator, the key assistants, the breakdown artists, the in-betweeners for each animated character. So the credits are different. And that's just a really interesting shift between cell animated production and digital, like computer animated films. They're working on shots and sequences, not just following a character all the way through.
And how does that then? I mean, I know Pixar is kind of, you know, very much kind of presents this narrative of the team and the kind of like collaboration all of that. Like, do you think that, do they organise things differently in order to kind of emphasise that team, or is it similar?
That's I don't think I've ever been asked a question that isn't by you on the podcast. But you know, Pixar is interesting because there's the promotional material around lots of these films. So you're absolutely right that this is a team effort. But I feel like, you know, Google do that in terms of the, you know, hey Google, we're all in this together. And then you know, certain people are to park near the building, and certain people park all the way over there. And so Pixar isn't like that. And obviously, some of the ways in which people have talked about work environments in Hollywood over the last few years, including at Pixar, suggests the opposite of exactly this sort of team. We're all in this together. It's just like a playground. It's just like a. And Richard McCulloch's done some work on Pixar and the way that those sort of special features play with the animators. Is just, you know, on little, what is it, scooters going between the different rooms and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. So that sense of collaboration perhaps does match, however, the way that in computer animated films like Pixar, because you are working on shots that comprise a sequence, that sense of collaboration is sort of being borne out in the way that the film is constructed, rather than in, say, something like Aladdin, where there is there is a slight division because people are allocated certain characters, because and I guess we've talked to video to artists that also say, well, I didn't really work on characters, I worked on landscapes or worked on backgrounds and setting. However, the way that they describe it, and I'm going to garble this, but kind of people like Chris McKenna and Andrew Whitehurst, they don't use the words that we use. They're like, oh no, we call it simulation. The simulation artists are, or the technical artists are the ones that do this. So they don't even use the same vocabulary that we use to talk about character and background. But I think this is why computer animation invites these kinds of discussions, because there is this kind of mystification around labour. We sort of don't really know how it's done. We know how computers work, but I know more about how cell animation and drawing and clay puppetry works, but I don't really know how computer animation works. It's still kind of mystified.
Well, should we pivot now between sort of how this stuff is operating behind the scenes to kind of, I was about to say,
let's do
camera and that nearly.
So I guess I've always, you could speak to this. Why, what is it about Toy Story then that is so rich for thinking about, you've mentioned this kind of skirting boards and that, but it seems to be a film that's like replete with surfaces and textures, and it's the first, first computer animated, 1995. We've had Jurassic Park, we've had, you know, The Abyss and all these sorts of. So
what will thinking about texture help us understand about Toy Story? To ask an absolutely impossible question.
Set me up.
We
still comfortably got half an hour. So
it just seems like it just seems like a really rich film to be doing this kind of textural analysis.
Indeed. I mean, and I guess that in some ways it isn't as well, because it is now, you know, kind of dated technologically, it's not, you know, kind of as perfect as other films. But I think, I mean, that's part of maybe why it's particularly productive, because it's a kind of a starting point. It's partly like it's the first. Not the first.
I think we're allowed to say it's the first. It's funny. I feel like I've given this podcast a complex now.
But the kind of, you know, the examples that you just gave of like Jurassic Park and The Abyss, it's like a bit in it, but this is the first like full, the whole world is computer animated. I mean, I think there's something about the way in which it, and maybe this is part of like, you know, the film's resonance in general, is that it takes place in a kind of everyday space, a space that we recognise, that, you know, it's kind of dealing with these ideas of nostalgia and childhood, and maybe there's something very kind of powerful about that in relationship to how those spaces are constructed. And I do think, like, you know, the more I kind of engaged with the film, that sense of like seeing bits of space that you don't see, you know, a windowsill becomes a platform to give a speech from.
Yeah.
A skirting board becomes like we're hiding from, you know, whatever, or, you know, next to the bed by the toy box is where you have a kind of like office meeting. You know, like the kind of like, everyone wants to think their toys are alive. So engaging with those spaces and the kind of scales and what the toys are doing, I think, you know, maybe there's a connection there between ideas about texture and design, but like, what is the appeal of the film?
I'm going to toss around a kind of half a brewing thought, which is like that what you're describing there sounds very much kind of like obviously this is a film about play because it's a film about toys, but in a way, the playful register of the movie might be best expressed through what you're describing, in that, like, what is play if not an ability to take one object, you know, if talking about play in the real world, like, you take an object and you give it a quality that it doesn't actually have through a kind of imaginative process, right? So you take
a stick.
You take a stick and pretend it's a sword, or indeed you take a plastic sword that's clearly a plastic sword and pretending it's steel and metal and all this kind of stuff. So there's something about kind of the imaginative transformation of texture whilst also never kind of conquering texture in play itself, right? You know, you that's the thing you can't do. You can manipulate its shape and you can manipulate its size, but the thing that makes it clearly an object of play rather than the thing it's trying to emulate is this sense of texture. And it's I hadn't thought about that, but like the film is very interested in making spaces new spaces through the way it kind of frames them, shoots them, creates this sense.
Yeah, and I think there's something about, like, on the one hand, the achievement of the the animators in creating like plastic and these very, you know, you can feel what or that you know the differences between the toys and what they feel like through, you know, how the animators have made the textures. But yeah, I think that's a really interesting way of like you know it's play because it's plastic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But you engage with those different, you know, they are also real in inverted commas.
Yeah. I mean, because I've written about this in relation to anthropomorphism and this kind of emphasis, I think, in computer animated films on the non-human and this idea of kind of point of view perspectives that allow us to see these world, these fictional worlds that are really kind of anecdotal. So a toy's story, a bug's life, a bee's movie, and so forth. So they're kind of the point of view that allows us to see these new spaces. You're right. So I was also thinking about kind of miniaturization and fantasy and sort of philosophers that have written about the pleasure of the miniature and stuff like that, and Bachelard and all this sort of stuff. But obviously there are so many fantasy stories about, you know, Alice in Wonderland, the shrinking, but like this sort of miniaturization that allows us to see the world kind of differently. But absolutely central to these sort of anecdotal worlds of a toy's story is being able to see like new textures. I've never studied.
Yeah.
I've never, you know, I like the idea that I can, okay, so scale allows me to follow a rat as it runs around a kitchen in Paris, but like a little coaster and a like a ball of yarn become a table, right? So all these different objects are becoming different things. But it allows us, it would seem, to kind of study the worlds of these things through the textures and kind of almost discover or rediscover these animated worlds because we're seeing the texture of a skirting board, which I've never really studied.
Yeah, I'm thinking of the ball, right? They're kind of the blue ball when it's, and they're kind of the rubberiness of that ball is kind of so hyperbolic, kind of in that shot. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Think about it. Yeah, but presumably they have to kind of intensify. Well, I don't know. They kind of intensify so you have the textures, but they're sort of amped up a bit.
Yeah, what to be from the toy's perspective. Yeah. Right. Yeah, I think that. But that's a really interesting point of like, what happens to texture when the scale changes.
Yeah.
So you kind of have to...
Paintbrush strokes. I think a paintbrush strokes become these huge...
Yeah. Or like the surface of Sid's desk is this kind of like terrifying like landscape of rough and kind of scored edges and all of that kind of thing where normally you'd walk into a room and look at a desk and you'd be like, oh, it's a bit...
Worn.
A bit worn, but it's not this like, kind of hyperbolic space. So yeah, I think, but I the idea of play being really important to that. And like, you know, I don't know, like refinding our childhoods by having to look in a different perspective.
Yeah,
really interesting.
Yeah.
It strikes me, you talked about the outdatedness of some of the technology now, and it strikes me watching it, you know, more recently, I guess there are kind of, there are three images that are currently in my mind, and they might be really kind of, there's far more nuance in this, but it might be a fun little spectrum to kind of play with, which is that there seems to be, there's an image I have in my head with the unsuccessful image, the unsuccessful CGI, like, okay, they haven't quite got that right yet. So I'm thinking of sort of Sid, really, like Sid's face feels very unlived in, that. So there's kind of the bad object of that in my head. And then I've got kind of on two sides of it, like, I've got the shine of Buzz Lightyear's kind of plastic clone. And I've got the kind of feltness of Woody.
Yeah.
Right, you know, like, and it seems to me the film is quite interested in those two textures. I don't know if this concurs with your reading, Lucy, but like there seems to be like there are things that are harder than real life and things that are softer than real life, to be really glib with the language. But like there's the feltness of Woody, there's the plasticness of Buzz, and both of those even now have a certain affective and effectiveness to them. But so it's almost, I don't know if it's because of technology, like where we want to go with this in terms of narrative.
Well, plastic hasn't, yeah.
Technological limitation. We could go to just kind of whatever we want to talk about in terms of the movie. But like, it seems like the film is kind of, there's a lot, like toys are either, you know, toys, lots of toys embody those two kind of zones, right? We've got Slinky is kind of felt, well, is he felt?
No, like I think he's either, well, it might be wood actually.
Right, so
yeah, wood and leather. Right?
Wood and leather, yeah, exactly. So you've got that, and then there's kind of this, yeah, his spring. You've got Bo Peep, who's kind of this porcelain sheen, more kind of like, which creates the kind of weird dynamic between her and Woody, but you've got, you know, the squeaky aliens, and you're like, there seems to be a kind of like, there's one rhetoric of softness and cutesiness and the home and domestic and Andy's bedroom, bedspread and things like that. And then there's the other, which is, Buzz's helmet, The clasp of Sid's room feels very hard space, you know, things like that. I'll stop now. But thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think it goes back to that kind of, to go down the technological route. Yeah. Maybe it's like the instrumentalization of what was possible then. So, you know, it's possible to make all of these kind of soft, hard, but skin is too too kind of complicated. So this becomes the perfect avenue to through which to kind of show off the technology. But it's also making you wonder now that the film is, you know, much older. Are we going to have a kind of nostalgia for a kind of early CGI aesthetic where, you know, if they were to go back to Toy Story and like make it better, in inverted commas, like would everyone be like, you know, would it be like a Star Wars phenomenon where it was like, oh, you've cleaned it up too much?
Yeah. And now why is Hayden Christensen in this film?
Why did you put him there?
Well, I suppose this is where the perils of the animated franchise come in, because as the films go on, the technology gets better. So you are literally going, well, the first one's not as good as the second one, which is why we have the sequence that I can't remember if we talked about this, but the kind of the sequence in Toy Story 2 of him being kind of painted, Woody being painted and redone. It's like, well, the technology existed, but you can't alienate the audience by Woody returning in the second film looking totally different. So you write a sequence where he gets improved and kind of glorified so that you can show off the new technology. And then and then they do that for the third and the fourth one, but without that sequence. So the characters look, they're dirtier and more worn, but the perfection of their wornness is better. So they look even better worn, kind of thing, and kind of a bit broken and a bit chipped and stuff, and the buzzes, stickers are peeling off. And so this is kind of the peril of the animated franchise, which and I do think you're right in terms of that kind of technological determinism. I think you cannot get away from technology being able to replicate these sort of shiny surfaces first. So it makes sort of perfect sense that Toy Story would. And you mentioned kind of showing off the tech, and I think I always show the opening sequence to my students with regards to audiences know it's the first computer animated film. They're really excited. Here we go. What's it going to do? It's going to. We've seen the dinosaurs from whatever, from Jurassic Park, and the first shot is that wallpaper, and it's like but it's the cloud wallpaper.
Yeah.
And the audience is like, "That's what clouds are going to look like." It's a bit weird, isn't it? Why? I thought they could do them, and then you reveal that that's not the cloud. That's the wallpaper. That's wallpaper. And so you have this really kind of reflexive play of and then you have a drawing, I think, of a kid's drawing of Mr. Potato Head, and you're like, oh, I don't really know what's going on here. I thought this was a... And then Andy's hand comes in with the real Mr. Potato Head, and he's like, money, money, and he's acting out this scene in terms of play. But it's replacing this drawn image with a three-dimensional... And you're like, here we go, I get it now. And then, of course, that's why the third film ends with the actual kind of replication of the wallpaper, but in the real world, kind of the clouds that look like the clouds from the wallpaper, but done in these amazingly kind of pristine ways. So the opening is kind of showing off the tech, but sort of playing with the audiences. You thought we were going to, like clouds, you thought we're going to look like that, but no, that's just wallpaper.
Now you say that, something very interesting about Andy's play in the movie, in that he doesn't play like a kid, or he doesn't play like anyone plays, in that like, there's a hell of a lot of labour involved in Andy's play before he starts playing. And I can remember sort of noticing this even back when I watched it originally, and that, like, you know, he's basically erected this kind of massive
Western.
So he's had to spend like all morning, all weekend making this elaborate Western town. Out of all these boxes.
Which perhaps explains why four people come to his birthday party. and they're all him.
And it's like, you know, it's kind of like, exactly. So it reminded me sort of, you know, kids that play with Warhammer. I don't really understand Warhammer. I should do as a fantasy scholar, but I don't. But like that kind of like, there's a lot of labour before you can do the game here. And the game is, you know, we'll play the sequence out. The boxes get smashed and destroyed in a way, and then he runs out of the room in a kind of spontaneous fashion. And in a way, that is the rhetoric that the movie is playful, but there's a hell of a lot of labour hiding behind it, right? Andy plays like Pixar, he uses quotation marks, play, but actually, you know, which means that actually the play we're seeing is extremely organised, extremely carefully
intensified,
managed, and requires a lot of kind of work to kind of create the world in which we can play.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, you see that in the toys as well, that the toys are workers in a certain kind of sense. That, yeah. Like, they have, and I'm always struck by like the randomness of, I mean, not randomness is not the right word, but the eclecticness of the group of toys, sure. as well, which maybe speaks to your sense of like having to construct, like, how do you construct a world where you have Woody and Mr. Potato Head and the T-Rex and Slinky, like, that they don't kind of mesh. It's not like he's playing with a set of Lego.
Yeah.
They're not a complete set.
Yeah.
But it's also, but the opening is also kind of this part of this play that you mentioned, this construction, is that you get to see how computers can replicate other animated, so like it can do drawing. Computer doesn't look like anything, but it can make itself look like painting on a box. So it's like this, the opening is this kind of symphony of different, Mr. Potato Head is reflected in the floor. You see all the little sort of seam marks. And this is where, you know, Jennifer, you're right, that kind of Jennifer Barker and Vivian Sobchak do kind of name check Toy Story, and I think in The Tactile Eye, Barker, like, it's like a couple of sentences, you know, oh no, you can see the seams on the,
she says it's too perfect,
yeah. And then that opening sequence is like, look at all these different ways in which like different forms of image making, the painting of the cow and the herd on the on the boxes and stuff,
yeah.
The different plastic surfaces and stuff, and yeah,
it's really interesting. Now I'm thinking this through, like, so the other pleasure in that sequence is the kind of the miscasting, like, you know, so who am I going to get to play the villain in this world created? Let's get Mr. Potato Head to do it. And even stuff like, you know, Rex the dinosaur, okay, fine, ferocious, but even then it's like, of course, in a western you'd have an attack like dinosaur, whatever it is, right, and a force field dog or whatever it is. But it's interesting that Buzz, there's a difference in that, right? Because Buzz isn't allowed to do that as much as the other characters, right? Buzz is Buzz Lightyear, right? And then when he plays with Buzz Lightyear, it's the Buzz Lightyear world. I'm running around being a space avenger. He can't cast Buzz as a sheriff in at least not in the first movie. Kind of that gets more flexible, and the only time Buzz is allowed to do that is when it's not Molly, it's Sid's when he's drunk at the tea party and he's Mrs. Nesbitt. You know, yeah, that's when he's allowed to be someone else, and the film is ridiculing him for it, right? You know, it's Sid's sister, isn't it?
Yeah.
I can't remember. Fine. So there's something about Buzz Lightyear is a toy that has a specific function
yeah.
And that's associated with his kind of plasticness and his hardness.
I was going to say, is it a function of his kind of surfaces and his texture and his material? Because there's a difference between kind of the texture and the material. So cell animation is material, because I can touch the cell and a hair might get trapped in the thing. But obviously it's kind of immaterial. Mm. But clearly we can talk about textures sort of in the same way as we can in many ways as sort of live action films. You can talk about the photography, quote marks again, of textures in computer animation. And they seem to be doing a lot of heavy lifting in the film as well.
Yeah, and I think that then goes back to the sense of texture as narrative, or the relationship between texture as surface and texture as narrative, because the textures that separate Woody and Buzz are really important to that. You know, I think your sense of, like, there is the toy world and Buzz comes into it, but he can't integrate into that because he is different. He comes from his own world. There is a kind of textural opposition between him and Woody in particular, and the kind of wornness of Woody, you know, the bit where he lifts up his foot. When Andy first signs Buzz's foot, and it's all kind of new and clean and shiny, and Woody has like, oh, look at my foot, it's all worn and the, you know, scuffed. So that's absolutely, that kind of character dynamic is played out through texture. But yeah, I think it's interesting what you said about the kind of individual versus group, which again makes me think of like their workers. They're like part of, you know, they are constructing things for Andy. Like, we see Andy playing, but they kind of set things up for him to play with them. They're kind of concerned with their dynamics, which translate to his kind of play world. So the kind of conflict between Buzz and Woody is a kind of rift in that world. And maybe it, it maps onto the ways in which then Andy plays with them.
But also this sort of materiality, the surface, that actually is kind of used for comedy, because I think when they're first, when Woody and Buzz first sort of meet, and Woody's like, who's this guy? There's a lot of like tapping of, he's like, oh, what are you, almost yeah. like what are you made of? And he's tapping him on yeah. the, I mean, we can have a whole discussion about sound's role in the creation of texture and yeah. animation anyway, and especially digital animation. But there's lots of like, and then there's also conversations, I think. Obviously, Buzz thinks he's made of something different. He's like, oh, it's a kind of polycarbonate. And
yeah. Oh, yeah.
No, it's
yeah,
just,
yeah.
just plastic. And they're talking about where they're from, Mattel and all this. So there's a kind of surface is kind of, texture is kind of comedy, like it's played in this in the film as a sort of space for them to interrogate what are you made of and sort of thing. So I thought that's kind of interesting. And the
and maybe yeah. the like hardness that like the extreme plastic nature of Buzz like reinforces that gap between like we all know he's a toy, he's really obviously a toy because yeah. he's such like hard plastic, like you're saying, the sheen of the helmet and all the rest of it, but he thinks he's made out of these kind of sophisticated yeah. scientific materials. Yeah. So that absolutely kind of like, yeah, kind of amplifies that yeah. joke.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's like, you know, Buzz, the big joke of it, right, is that Buzz thinks he is what he is, and everyone else is quite comfortable with the fact that they're not really anything until they are played with, right, mm. you know, so... but you know the, you know but you know don't touch that, don't use that inappropriately, you're using all these things wrong, whilst Mr. Potato Head's very happy to be played as a various different personas by Andy, and he can remain, you know, he's I guess they're workers, but I guess they're also kind of actors, mm. right, you know, other than Buzz. Mm. Buzz is method. Yeah. Yeah. And the rest of them are just sort of, you know, classically trained, like, you know, it's Laurence Olivier and Dustin Hoffman
yeah, yeah.
in toy form, right? Because that's his sin, right? Is that like you don't understand the malleability of this situation.
Mm.
I had a question based on, I guess, your work and how it maybe has changed or not changed in relation to something like Toy Story. The sort of, I have all these things to say about texture, and it's like, does computer animation kind of pose a problem or an opportunity to talk about texture? In that, I wonder whether you thought, based on what we were saying, whether you thought that texture is now in animation more implicated in kind of ideas of lighting and sound, because there isn't a texture to Woody until it's made kind of hyper-realistic and there's maybe an indication on the soundtrack, or it's well lit so we can actually see the brushstrokes of a whatever. And again, I'm reminded of the sequence in the second one where Woody's foot is painted and you have the brushstroke dipped in the paint and then smoothed across. So you see not only the brushstrokes, but the foot kind of momentarily starts to dry even as the paint is being moved across. So I guess I wondered whether you thought, or maybe it's all, texture has always been implicated in lighting, and because obviously you want to show off that, but it seems, again, is this something that's also then intensified in animation, because I need to be able to create an artificial texture out of kind of binary code, and I need it to kind of sound right and look right, and so there's more of an emphasis on texture's relationship to kind of lighting and sound, or whether that's always been the case.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we perceive texture through light and sound, importantly. Like, so you can't understand texture without either of those things. So in that sense, I think, you know, it's always always been important. And I think, you know, your point earlier about like the importance of sound for animation in helping us register and maybe, you know, enhance the idea of texture when there is a kind of technological gap, perhaps. And I think, you know, sound is absolutely a space where we take that for granted and, you know, that like it really fills in that kind of information for us without us really kind of thinking that through. And we really respond to that bodily. But I think...
Well, I wonder what that's where the kind of phenomenology is, the field where, you know, Barker and Sobchak, that of course computer animation and the sort of the, what is it, the seam lines of the army men, where you can see the plastic, of course phenomenologists are going to be interested in those kinds of things.
But also
seeing through the eyes. Through the eyes, sorry.
Yeah, and I think, you know, part like certainly in Vivian Sobchak's writing, she's also responding to the fact that this becomes a part of the popular discourse around Toy Story. That, you know, I think she cites several reviews in that article from, you know, popular sources of like the thing that they're remarking on is the texture and the plastic and the kind of touchability of that plastic. So yeah, maybe again it's the kind of ways in which it draws attention to something that has always been there, but because we know that hundreds of people like worked for years and years to make it look like something, and then again that kind of feeding into like, oh, what is the kind of what's the next step in animation? It's adding more detail, more texture.
Does it matter at all that we're talking about a, does the absence of the pro filmic matter to this conversation? The answer could be no. Like, I'm quite happy if the answer's no. But like, we're talking about
texture without
texture is generated rather than in any. I mean, always texture is generated cinematically, but there is no, there's nothing, there's no longer anything captured. That's all generated in kind of, Is that, does that matter at all?
I'm kind of, I would say not. And maybe this is partly going back to like why Toy Story. And maybe it's because I think the things that the animators are doing are drawing on something that already exists. Or, maybe it's a question for you both as well of like, does the pro filmic not exist in animation because you do a bunch of work before you animate something, right?
Yeah, agreed. Yeah.
You know, and Pixar in particular have this kind of, I mean, I remember with the fur in Monsters, Inc. in particular, they talked about all of the fur that they looked at and felt. And, you know, so the ways in which they're translating the material into animation, like, does that mean that the pro filmic doesn't exist?
Was this, I mean, so, Chris? I would say I don't think it matters because, obviously there are processes now specific to digital animation, like your texture mapping where, okay, so texture is now being created and it's now a thing, right? Does it matter that it's not pro filmic? Well, computer animated films are kind of unusual insofar as they seem to fold in other forms of animation as part of their production before we get to the digital. So they do clay models and they play with the kind of the they don't animate them, but they sort of play with them animatedly and figure out what works. And so they have the clay model, which you scan in to create a wireframe, but they also basically create a cell animated version of the film using storyboards. So two other forms of animation are already involved before we get to the digital side. So digital is just another process of animation involved. It's difficult when you're dealing with these top-down, okay, Pixar, yeah, they did all this stuff. We flew to, you know, did all this research into Coco, right? Again, you could have just hired, you know, two non-white Americans to direct the movie. you have done it. So it's just like, there's a way in which the mythology of the way these films, there often is a drive to the authentic. But I'm a bit more skeptical of that when it occurs in stuff like Moana and Coco, and we've talked about this where, you know, there's sort of the setting up of the authentic research trip that these people have gone on to be able to authentically replicate this culture and its people and its traditions and whatever. But then I guess I believe it more when they're going, yeah, we just held a bunch of fur and managed to kind of process. But I don't think it, I think if they're kind of scanning in these textures and they're creating a texture, and I don't think it matters that it's virtual or immaterial because it's still textural. It's still layered. I think when you described it earlier, they are creating a texture. They're just doing, there is a camera, it's just in a computer, but it still has lenses, it still has different, you can still change the lens, kind of exposure, the aperture, you can still do all those things. It's just not an actual apparatus that I'm holding, but I'm working with, there is a model camera, I guess.
Does it matter because it's sold as and identified as and received as an animation? Or, like, so I guess, you know, why would it matter if this, like, because the same technology is then used in live action, right? This is where the kind of interesting, this is why I guess I asked the question, because, like, it seems to matter to audiences that things are quote-unquote real or actually filmed and all this sort of stuff. I mean, I mean, Chris, you do good work on this at the moment in terms of what on earth that actually means and like pricking apart the slipperiness of those terms. Yeah. But it does seem to matter to someone that like it's better that we filmed the building and Tom Cruise jumping off it than it was that we kind of CGI'd his body into it. Or we'll talk about, you know, a stunt feeling more, you know, like the obsession with Chris Nolan's supposed in camera trickery, even though we could pick that apart like a wet cake. Yeah, like it seems to matter to some people. So I'm just interested. Like, is it just that the technology's not quite there yet? We cannot create this textured approach to reality, live action. One day we will.
The industry obviously thinks about it in terms of texture. They think about texture. They think about. Yeah. So they don't qualify. They don't. It's not digital texture map. It's. Text. About it in the. So I guess their language and their vocal. They are, and we've talked about this with the quote unquote Disney live action films. Absolutely, they're entirely. The Lion King is entirely animated, but they talk about it as a live action film, because live action is an aesthetic. So it is a live action film because it's a live action film. So we can go beyond this, but I feel like it's important to acknowledge the way that maybe the industry, they just refer to texture, and to them it matters. It matters that they talk about it in these terms.
Yeah. Because
that's their access into it.
And maybe that we expand that sense of, like, who does it matter to as well. So, like, design, you know, the work of production designers matters terribly to actors, for example. Mm. Like, you know, and maybe that comes back to, I don't want to kind of slip into that. Yeah, like, if you're performing in a green screen, then it's, you know, inauthentic or whatever. But actors do appreciate having, you know, things to interact with and a space that feels real to them. So there is a kind of, the question of who does that matter to and who are all of the people involved in that work. So does it matter to an animator that they have an understanding, I don't mean to kind of keep coming back to like examples that are like the real world, because obviously fantasy is just as, you know, kind of engaged with the material as well. But if you're an animator, does it matter that you've really engaged with a material that you are then animating? So, you know, do you need to have felt the texture to make the texture? In the same way that, you know, I think animators talk about their performances.
Yes. Yes, now animators talk about themselves as... Yeah, and scholars talk about the animator as actor and the animator slash actor. And, yeah, Paul Wells and Stephen Prince have just sort of used that as a way to talk about the labour, I guess, of the kind of performance. I guess we're sort of veering towards time. My final question was, is there a particular sequence from Toy Story that sort of... that you think...
Some good textures.
Yeah, because, I mean, I've shown the opening to the students for a long time, and I'm like, is there another bit to the film that you think works really well? Or is like, this is where the textures are really on show, or they're doing some of that work in terms of world-building, maybe, that you mentioned?
Yeah, I mean, I think probably, like, and particularly, you know, for the kind of the contrast, the scenes in Sid's space, and the kind of, like, the ways in which the textures really contribute to the feel of that space and the kind of feel of that space for the toys. So, yeah, like I said before, the kind of the desk and its kind of scoring and wear and all the rest of it, which is both about, like, this is a dramatically different space from the kind of clean, safe space of Andy's room, but it's also, like, what could happen to them. So the textures of the desk are, like, bare marks of what has happened to the toys. Yeah. And you get all of those lovely combinations of, like, the baby head with the Meccano fit. Like, so they have kind of collisions of texture in them. Whereas Andy's toys are like, that is a complete texture. Although they're kind of different. Yeah. So, yeah, I think Sid's room is super interesting.
The baby head spider thing, whatever it is called, it's almost like a weird kind of nightmare version of Slinky, right? In that, like, Slinky is a creature of combined textures, but for some reason it's not that uncanny space. But you're right. Actually, when you were talking earlier, I was like, I can. There's a. I hadn't quite put my finger on it, but that kind of the feeling that you could almost squeeze the baby head and it's kind of plastic and things like that versus the really sharp mechanic nature.
There are a few kind of parallels. So I think you have the binoculars become that creepy thing with an eye or something.
Oh yeah.
And then
essentially the hooker. So the
Barbie leg.
The Barbie legs with the
I never
fishing
got that
rod.
Gag. Right, okay.
Fishing rod is kind of like this monstrous.
This is why we're not animation scholars.
is sort of bow peak. Like there's these weird kind of my bonus final point one question is, does that sort of mean, or do you, it's interesting that you've the textures in the film, the cleanness ones are kind of like not the less interesting ones, but like the texture's interesting when it's discordant and scuffed and more dramatic and more sort of light and dark rather than just wallpaper, which is done no less well, but it just, that's not where our eye is perhaps going to, or maybe it's because we know it's animated, we're like, oh, that's cool how they scuff that up.
And maybe that's where the work is visible as well. So the animators talk about, the kind of the work they did to Sid's room in particular to kind of transform it from a kind of smooth, homogenous space to this like rough, textured, like kind of nightmare world. And they talk about the kind of glitter and the stucco on the ceiling. And you really have like that sense of it. They wanted to have like dirt and dust and all of that kind of stuff. So... yeah, in a way it is like, here's the more visible
thing
that they have done, and the kind of, those, you see the layers.
Yeah, like a labour of scuffing.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That's where the visible labour is. Great, yeah, I love that.
Terrific. I mean, we could keep going, but I think we're running short of time. So we hinted, first off, thanks, Lucy, for talking about Toy Story.
That was
a really wonderful way to approach it through.
There's
nothing me and you have to say on it that's remotely as interesting as all that. So that was really wonderful to talk through. You mentioned that you're a video essayist as well as being a sort of academic in the traditional sense. So talk us through some of the video essays that you'd like to share with listeners and where they can find them if they wish.
So I've been making video essays for the last couple of years. So you can find me on Vimeo if you just Google my name and Vimeo.
We'll do some hyperlinking and make sure.
Lovely. Yeah, okay. So the kind of thing that I've been doing has been very much kind of thinking about design. So I've done a couple of video essays on the work of George Heuning and Huener, who was a colour consultant in the 1950s and 1960s in Hollywood. And I also have some kind of work around sound. My kind of next project is thinking about the work of designers. And I'm planning to do that through video essay form.
I've just randomly had a thought based on kind of texture and service. I was thinking about the replication of like grainy footage, like live action, like VHS, like old grainy, like the texture and of that. So we've talked in Toy Story about the things, but kind of the texture of video actually in the kind of videographic. Anyway, just an odd collision between video essay and texture. And I was like, oh yeah, these films kind of play with, you've got the shiny surface of the toys and then you've got what it looks like to watch an old home video.
Which is something that Ian Garwood writes about in his book. Absolutely.
Okay.
Right. Well,
we'll do some hyperlinking.
We'll do
to
some
your
hyperlinking.
Very successful,
stuff.
Video essays, definitely. So thank you.
Otherwise, thanks for coming on the show. So it's Vimeo, Lucy Fife Donaldson. Google it and put the word Vimeo, or Google it on Vimeo if that's a thing you're allowed to do, and we will find it. But
this is someone who doesn't use Vimeo, clearly.
This is someone that doesn't use Vimeo. No. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks very much for having me.
Well, you can find us at fantasy-animation.org. We must have some Toy Story stuff on the blog somewhere.
Yeah, we do.
We're so confident that we don't even need to name them. Just Google Toy Story on Fantasy Animation.
We have posts on Pixar and the kind of plasticity of Toy Story.
Cool. And if people want to write some more, contact us, let us know. We'd be delighted to receive it. You can follow us on the various social media channels at Fananim Research, FANANIM Research. And you can use that same handle, FANANIMResearch@gmail.com, to suggest episode for suggestions for episode future footnote episodes. That's what I should say in that order. Otherwise, that's been us for an episode, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.